Reloved Radio, a podcast sharing inspirational stories about pre-loved fashion.
Welcome to the first episode of our three-part series exploring the dynamic intersection of women, fashion, and consumerism. I'm your host, Chrissy Dunn, and I'm joined by a panel of experts who bring a wealth of knowledge and insight to the table around these topics. We have gentle coach Viv Oldham, who has a compassionate approach to mindful living and has inspired countless individuals to break free from the constraints of societal expectations. Next, we welcome money coach Jacinta Ebsworth, who specializes in encouraging women to cultivate a healthy relationship with money and align their spending habits with their values and aspirations. Joining us as well is sustainable fashion expert and personal stylist Hazel Law, who has a deep understanding of ethical fashion practices and specializes in curating wearable wardrobes. And last but certainly not least, we have someone who, in her own words, is op shop obsessed and a vintage loving girly. You probably know her as Routinely a Mess on Insta, but we know her as Charlie. And in fact, it absolutely would not surprise any of us if she was recording this from an op shop. The topic of today's episode is consumption and habit change. Why is it so hard to stop buying? And we're going to be talking about the complexities of fast fashion consumption, the societal pressures faced by women, and the life-changing power of mindful shopping. I want to start with a couple of stats, which I personally find horrifying. Firstly, a recent study conducted by the Australian Fashion Council and Central Queensland University reports that Australians send 200,000 tonnes of clothing and textiles to landfill every year. And secondly, on average, every Australian buys 56 items of clothing yearly, most of which are made from non-sustainable, non-durable materials. Hazel, I want to start with you because I know in your role as a sustainable stylist, you're very familiar with these stats. How do they reflect broader global trends in fast fashion and its impact on the environment?
I'd like to start with the environmental piece. And I think that, you know, it's easy for us to, as one person, think, oh, I'm just going to buy one cheap t-shirt. I'm just going to buy one cheap dress. And that is not really going to have an impact on the rest of the world. But, you know, if each person in the world, 8 billion of us, or however many it is now, are thinking that, you can see how that can really easily start to add up. And I think that what we actually need to realize is that fashion is the second biggest polluter in the universe. I'm not sure about the universe, guys, in the world, though, in the planet that we live on. And in order to really start to change the trajectory of the climate crisis, we have to get a handle on what we're doing when it comes to fast fashion and when it comes to our wardrobes and when it comes to our approach to consumption. And without starting to uncouple our personal style with consumption, I'm not sure how else to do that. That's the number one thing. I've been reading a book recently. It's the Anti-Capitalist Book of Fashion. And it says it's a sad day for the world when the word fashion came into place, because it basically started the idea of trends. And before, it was just style. It was personal style. It was dressing for ceremony. You know, it was all of those things. And now we're on a trend treadmill and we can't seem to get off.
And the fallout from the fast fashion industry, it disproportionately impacts women, both as consumers and also as workers in the garment supply chain, right?
Absolutely. So, you know, it's the women who are also the most affected by climate change and by the impact that the fast fashion industry is currently having on our planet. Women are the most likely to actually be negatively impacted by that, you know, let alone all of the women workers who have to leave their families to make a living. And even women in the global north, we're targeted by fast fashion. We are the people who spend our hard-earned money and spend our hard-earned time and energy collecting these fast fashion pieces, because we're basically being trolled by the fashion industry and primed to constantly buy.
Charlie, as someone who I know has recently made a conscious effort to shop slower, Why do you think it's so hard for us, and when I say us, I mean specifically women, to stop buying?
I really believe that there's a level of pre-programming already within us from what we've absorbed from social media. Even back like when I was in high school, I remember when it would come to the weekend and we'd have parties and things, and me and my friends, we would talk about what we were going to wear. And even at the age of 14, there was that pre-programming that we had to go and get a new top. And we used to always go to Kukai and pick out like the new top of the week. And most of the time, what was happening was we were seeing the ones that the girls that were a bit older than us were wearing. And we would just buy that because of what we were seeing them do. We didn't see people ahead of us re-wearing and being like really advocating for that rewearability and that slow consumption mindset. And one thing that was different for me, and I like kind of began that unpre-programming with myself, was I couldn't afford to do that and go to Kukai and buy that $60 top. And I used to go to the op shop and see if I could find something similar. And eventually, like, I had this little kind of capsule wardrobe within my wardrobe as a teenager. But I still remember my friends and I like feeling as though we had to keep consuming and we had to keep changing things. We couldn't wear the same thing twice. Although we were just going to a friend's house. Like we weren't going to any sort of grand event or anything. But one thing that has really shifted that, I think, is when people have hiring businesses, and that's clothes swapping ethics and seeing how people share their wardrobes and look and go deeper into that. And I think, yeah, it all comes back to that pre-programming from social media and those external influences that have made us believe that new is better and that we need to constantly be changing and be doing something different, even if we wore something once.
I agree. It is so ingrained from such a young age. Whether it's magazines or whether it is the slightly older generation that we're looking up to, whether that be in high school or whatever, it's everywhere.
Absolutely. And as someone who's been out of high school for a little while, but it's so interesting that was happening when I was in high school, and I still even notice it now. And I always refer to myself as a retired influencer because I was in that scene a couple of years ago. And even then there were certain parts that were in that where we all wore something different to every single event, and you didn't want to be photographed or create a reel or anything in the same outfit that you wore to the event the week before. And I feel like I'm beginning to see a shift in that with people being more conscious and rewearing and just changing the accessories or having more fun with a garment or belting or doing something with it to evolve it. But that pre-programming, I think, is still there. And that deprogramming has to be motivated by self, and people have to want to do it. It almost needs to become trendy in a way. We need that to hit the trend treadmill. And we've already seen like such a big part of that come through with the op shopping trend that comes through earlier this year, which really has peaked. I'd say it was around January, February. We saw the big peak of that thanks to the mob wife trend that came through, because what happened was no one could find the biggest thing from the mob wife trend, say that in quotations, was that furs and all those animal prints were coming back in. And these fast fashion companies, although they're very fast, they cannot produce a quality faux fur or a fur at the rate that is accessible to people. So immediately the biggest trend that came through was actually turning to vintage sellers and op shopping in order to find these garments. And already, like, we're in May and we're seeing people actually even consume too fast in an op shop, which was meant to be one of the most sustainable options. So that's jumped on the treadmill, and that I really believe has come from that mob wife aesthetic thing that was coming through late December, January, February of this year.
I love to see that something positive is coming from a trend, a fast fashion trend, I have to say.
Absolutely.
That.
I was so lucky when that trend spiked. I was actually in Copenhagen. So I felt so lucky because I was in this amazing fashion capital, and I could spend all day just sitting on the street and just watching these amazing people walk by and just shamelessly dressing for themselves. And I remember I'd actually thought to myself, there's one piece that I really would like to buy, and I really wanted to find a
vintage faux fur. If the right fur came along, maybe I would have to think about that for myself, but I really wanted to find one. And it was funny because within a few days of that, I thought it was just my FBI AI person that had gone on my phone and suddenly they were everywhere. And then this mob wife aesthetic kind of started rolling through and I went, what is going on? And there was this woman that runs an account on Instagram where she talks about all the analytics of Pinterest, TikTok and Instagram and everything. And she was saying this mob wife aesthetic was coming in and it was around the 20th year of The Sopranos. And apparently that has influenced that. But realistically, you can't get good quality faux fur and fur from these fast fashion places. In order to buy new, you're spending a very large amount of money that isn't as accessible by people. So the masses were turning to these resellers, which is just amazing that like that was available and people started changing their mindsets about shopping secondhand, which I even saw a shift in the people I was friends with going, oh, I don't want to go to the op shop with dirty clothes, to, oh yeah, it's vintage. Vintage, love the word vintage. It always has this different flair to it. And my mindset is I always laugh and say, if it was a family heirloom, it's priceless. But if it's a family heirloom that you've picked up from the op shop, suddenly it's a little bit more dirty or not as valuable. There's been a big shift in that. And I definitely agree with you. There has been a really positive shift from it. I just hope that now it doesn't keep cycling around too fast and we end up with op shops even more full of clothes that are just fast fashion and people are not being mindful with what they are even buying from the op shop or just thinking, oh, I'll just donate it. Like there even is a thought process that needs to go on before you donate and how you do that or why you're donating so much.
I think it's really fascinating because what you're describing, Charlie, is like the trends, but the trends being to buy pre-loved. So it's not actually getting beneath the surface of the behavior. It's like the trends are still happening. It's just a trend of a different nature. And the trend is buying pre-loved, which is great. But still, what is it in getting a vintage piece that they're longing? Like, what are they longing to have? And that's, I think, at the basis of the behavior change question is like, what are they really needing? What is it that's driving that urge to have that particular piece? And I'm curious for you, Charlie, like what is it about the fur that you were thinking about wanting in Copenhagen that really drives, like, what was it about the fur that you, or why you wanted that?
So my little, I love what you're saying. I completely agree that now all of a sudden going to the op shop is hyper trendy. And like, have we really hit that sustainable mark? And I think I even put up either a TikTok or Instagram post when it came up. This is when I was starting to get a little bit more vocal about how I felt about fashion and building that confidence to be vocal. Because for a long time, I wasn't very vocal about the fact that all my clothes are secondhand and like being mindful of, you know, what I'm consuming, how and all that and how much I love pop culture and da-da-da. But what really shifted was like realizing that when I saw that and got more vocal, I went, okay, I thought that when this mob wife aesthetic and we all started turning to these vintage sellers that things were going to get better. I thought it was going to be the shift. And I even put up a post saying, hopefully this is the catalyst for some change. And I mean, yes, people are talking about it, but I totally agree with you in that now people are just consuming even more and more, but now it's from secondhand. So they're consuming it at a cheaper rate. But for me personally, the fur one, that goes back forever. When I was younger, I used to go through magazines. I used to cut out clothes that I liked. And because I was always going to like secondhand markets as a kid, going to op shops, most of my clothes back then were also from op shops and secondhand. I used to cut out things that I wanted and I'd put them on like a little piece of paper, like a little vision board. And we're talking from when I was like under the age of 10 doing this. And one thing I always wanted, I had a few things. I wanted a really nice leather jacket, whether it was faux or just a really nice, cool biker jacket. That's all I ever wanted was that because I loved the way that it felt. I loved the way that a good quality garment felt in like an emotional sense with that. And the third thing was actually one I'd wanted for a really long time, but I had a bit of like guilt by like dressing nice and dressing myself up or being ceremonial with the way that I put outfits and clothes together. And around last year, I had a big shift in that. And I remember I had this like faux fur dream. I was like, I'm going to find a really cool coat that I wear shamelessly. And I love it. And when I was in Copenhagen and I witnessed these particular girls just dressing for themselves, dressing for the fun of it, dressing for the whole energy of it, it was just different. I thought, why am I not doing this?
I think that comes back to that piece around, and you were talking about this, like this conditioning to need the new piece for the party that you were going to, or the new top. And this sense that, which I don't know if everyone would agree with this, but there's a sense that women have been trained by culture to be desirable rather than to learn what it is they desire. And so when you see someone who really is in touch with what they desire, especially a woman, and then they're dressing to express that, it's so enigmatic and captivating and interesting because suddenly it's dressing for themselves rather than dressing
for
others. Yes, me. Absolutely.
I just wanted to scream, yes, as you were saying that, like, yes. And gosh, I sound very stereotypical in saying Copenhagen changed everything for me, but it did, because as a society in Denmark, or the little space that I was in, I was seeing men, women, people dressing for themselves and like just shamelessly doing it. Like there was this woman, I remember it, I was sitting having a pastry and a coffee. And it was like 2 degrees and I'm so cold. And all I could think about was that I'm cold. And this woman walks past me and she's in this coat. And it was embroidered in this like rainbow color, but it was white on the base and her hair's swishing. And she just looked so incredible and so comfortable and happy. And I went, whoa, that's it. That's it. I'm not judging her. I'm judging her on how her whole energy just shifted. And it wasn't that I wanted the coat. I wanted her energy and I wanted to have that level of confidence. And at the end of the day, she takes off the coat, but she's still that woman underneath. And when we shift that, and we go, what am I without the clothes? And the clothes just help a little bit more. And I fully believe that every day you get dressed, you set the tone for yourself. If you dress in bright colors, you wouldn't be surprised if more bright things come into your sphere. I'm a kindergarten teacher when I'm not doing all of this and I wear rainbow skirts to work. And it's funny that on days that I may not be feeling as great, if I put on a rainbow skirt, like a glittery rainbow skirt, and I've got this one and it shines if I stand in the light, there's something that lifts in me that goes, I did this. I set the intention for myself just to be a little bit more bright and a little bit more bold. And whether that is helping me work through what's going on underneath. But I remember when I took off that skirt, I actually just felt better. And I was ceremonial with the way that I chose myself and I chose to show up as myself to the world and present myself. And I think that is really powerful. And I just hope that people start to want to be motivated to want to do that for themselves too, because you have to want to do that.
People are such a vital component of fashion. Like without people, fashion, style, trend, none of that matters. None of that actually, like it doesn't have an impact unless we buy into that. So like that whole piece that you were just saying about really truly feeling yourself, really truly feeling your own personal style come through regardless of trending, regardless of whatever it is that we're being sold, like without people, fashion is nothing. And without the symbols that the fashion that we buy into actually provides, again, it doesn't mean anything. Like we're searching for these symbolic values in the clothes that we wear and these symbolic, I guess, just like the way that we really portray ourselves in the world. But it's the symbols that the clothes stand for as opposed to what they actually are, which is like garments made from violence, essentially. And I think, like, as you guys were both talking, I was thinking about how clothes are just another art form and fashion isn't, you know, and maybe perhaps not fashion, maybe we don't use that word, but clothes adorning a body is just another way of expressing, like Charlie said, how you're longing to feel or what you're longing to bring back to the world or how you're longing to make others feel with how you're dressing. And it's also a wonderful experiment that people can do. And I think particularly of teenagers who are going through a phase of really wrestling with authenticity and belonging and trying on a bunch of personas. Like, who am I? Am I this goth? Am I? And sorry, that's probably a really dated word. Am I, who are all these different types of characters that I can try on to find where I'm sitting for the time being? And in some ways we do that our whole lives, but perhaps we're not always completely aware.
Yeah, definitely. Like, matrescence is such a huge part of that for me. I was like, oh, I'm a mum now. I have to wear striped t-shirts. Cue me going to the shops and buying striped t-shirts, which I obviously never wore because I am that goth.
Trying not to laugh as you're saying, I have to keep muting myself.
So basically what you're saying is that we all need to find our own version of Charlie's rainbow skirt.
Yeah, exactly.
100%.
But within what you've got it in your wardrobe already. You don't need to go out and buy it. Like, it's in your wardrobe because you've already curated stuff that you've spent your precious time, energy, and money buying. You have it. It just might not have been getting worn.
Such a valid point.
Agree with that 100,000,000,000%. If I could throw a couple more on that, 100%. There's so much that you already have and you don't realize it. There is a point that you choose to maybe step back and reflect on what you have and whether that is already showing up as you, whether you're feeling at the deepest point, like, are you feeling shame with what you're wearing? Are you enjoying it? And then purposefully, if you are choosing then to reconsume, to actually then love what you get, like, to go, okay, the striped shirt, I had to really try not to cackle so much during that. If you look at your wardrobe and you don't feel a sense of belonging or a sense of connection to that, do your best to rework. And if you do decide to begin purchasing again and participate in that, know what it is you're after. And
yes,
strap yourself to that rocket, and you will be so surprised at how easy it is to find that.
And Charlie, what you were saying about those new tops, as you were talking, I was thinking, what were you looking for? Were you looking for a feeling of freshness? And it's like when you start to kind of think about, and I do this now before I buy clothes, I think to myself, what am I really actually wanting? I want to feel like you might be fresh, or I want to feel more creative in how I'm looking, like, and understanding what it is that's kind of driving that longing for that new thing. And where else could I get it? Like, thinking about those strategies, how else could I make myself feel like that? Could be the transformational pivot point for not needing to go out and buy the new.
Are you inside me? Is that what you just said?
Are you inside my head? I bet you are. You're inside.
And when you were talking about that childhood thing as well, Charlie, it was all like, I remembered the first time I wanted to fit in was in one of those exact scenarios. I might have been 8 or 9. I went to Steiner School, and at Steiner School, you have to say your birthday verse on a certain day of the week. And so if you dress the same as your bestie on the day that you were doing your birthday verse, which is, this probably makes no sense to anyone who didn't go to school, but you got to say your birthday verse in front of the class together. And so it was like this feeling of fitting in, this feeling of, if I fit in and I am dressed the same in like twinning clothes as my bestie, then I don't have to do this alone. And it's like that feeling that I think we're pushed into by the fashion industry is like, hey, you're not going to fit in. Like, don't, but like the point is now I don't want to, like, I don't care. What I'm looking for, to go back to your point, Viv, is not necessarily not to fit in, but that's no longer on the checklist. And I think for such a long time, it really was.
But it's how you belong. So it's different. How you belong is different now. Whereas we've got to remember that I think Charlie was talking about it, that kind of like the molding or the influence begins at such an early age about how we belong, and what we wear is such a big part of that. How do you make it safe for a kid when the rest of the outside world says, for you to be safe, you need to wear this, right? So how do we make it safe for kids when they're already going through this really big kind of process of who am I and how do I belong and what do I love and what do others love? And if I love what others love, then that's how I'm safe and I belong. And also being quite intuitive and having a really strong sense of what they like and want to wear and desire to wear, but remembering, oh my goodness, they're also walking the line of wanting to be really safe because child kind of scary.
And do you want to hear the punchline of it all about the top story? I didn't actually like the tops. Like I didn't even like them. I actually didn't like them. I don't even think I liked the fabric. You would know what fabric I'm talking about. I didn't like it. I didn't even like the color. I actually didn't like it at all. What I liked is that I fit in with my friends.
Yeah.
And I really, and gosh, probably still do, craved that connection with other people, specifically women, really craved that. And it was at the expense of my own desires.
Mm.
And this crazy big shift, not even too big, but it happens over and over again. And I'm in my early 20s, coming up to mid-20s now. And I would only say that in the last 6 to 12 months, I've actually really started dressing for me and dressing for what I like and who I am and not going, oh, I don't want to be overdressed and I don't want to be underdressed, but, and just feeling uncomfortable. And I don't even think I can really pinpoint the moment was. It definitely, I think my work assisted with that, working with children and having that contact with children changed it a bit for me, but actually going, what do I want? Like, what do I really want? And that shift, I think once I started, it was like there was no going back.
Yeah, that's that beautiful piece about women, the big picture is in, say, let's talk, in our Western culture and probably the cultures that we've been raised in, I can't speak for everyone, obviously, but, women's ability to ask that question, that beautiful question that you just said, what do I want? It is being so shut down over like hundreds and hundreds of years, because if you had needs as a woman 300 years ago, 200 years ago, 100 years ago, it wasn't safe. It wasn't safe to have needs. And so hooray that you're in your mid-20s and you're connecting to this sense of, hang on a sec, what do I want? And you can tap into that, because a lot of people, when I speak to them when we're coaching, and that's the question you tend to ask, is like, I don't know. I don't know what I want. They know what they don't want, but they don't know what they want, because it's a really tricky thing when you haven't grown up connected to your own needs. Absolutely.
And I think that comes back to the consumption. It's like, oh, if I'm not safe and I don't know how to ask for what I want and I don't know how to do this and that, what can I do instead? I can buy shit and I can feel good about that.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah. One of my favorite things to say is when someone makes a comment about their clothing or about themselves or anything, and they're diminishing themselves, I always love to say, why are you making yourself small for the comfort of others? Like, your comfort and your safety, so much more important, so much more important. And I've got to remind myself of this, because big hypocrite in saying, why are you making, I still do it to this day.
As a kindy teacher, Charlie, I've got a just out of kindy child who likes to wear a lot of rainbow clothes, like a lot, pretty much everything rainbow, every drawing is rainbow. You would have had that beautiful experience of seeing at that age, you would hope, at that kind of four-year-old mark, they're so authentically self-expressed, most kids at that age, that it's hard not to mirror that back to them. Like you said, wearing your rainbow skirt, it's such a delight to be around that age of a child.
Absolutely. Exactly. I think that was probably the most healing thing for me, was actually being around them and seeing that. I mean, I've had a student wear a pair of rainbow wellies, a pair of rainbow leggings, rainbow jumper, and underneath that rainbow jumper was a rainbow t-shirt, and on their head was a big bow. Like I'm talking not normal size, extra large bow with a big dial of Elsa on it. And this child walked in and came up and posed in front of me and said, "Do you like this?" And I said, "This is the best thing I've ever seen." And it wasn't about the clothes. It was about that. The fact that child strutted up to me and went, "Here I am. See me as I am." And I thought that is the best thing in the world. And I don't know what happens because it's obviously not my area of expertise, the transition, you know, into adulthood. I'm more on the younger side of children based. But something happens. We stop doing that. And I even look back at pictures of me as a child and things. And I always get told I'm very hyper feminine. And trust me, that every photo of me as a child, I'm in a fairy dress. I'm in a different color. And I didn't just have like one. I had every color of the rainbow. And I would match it with the same color pair of shoes. There would probably be a fairy wand that also matched, a big pair of wings, and that was how I wanted to present to the world. Love it. Absolutely love it. I don't know what shifted. That's probably for a therapist. That's not what this session's about. Now that's probably for a bit more of a clinical side of something, or one of my healers. That's not for this call. But something shifts in us from the age of 4 and 5. And we put down the rainbow skirt and we put down the fairy wings. And we put on this dulled version of ourselves, and we spend so much longer finding our way back to that. And my biggest hope is that through fashion, through this change in fashion and creative climate, is that people find their way back to themselves. And if that way back to themselves is a black top and a black skirt and everything that isn't my style, do it, and do it shamelessly. Do it with love. Do it all the time. Be happy and just do that for yourself.
You nailed it when you identified the lack of role models for that rewearing or the kind of creativeness with limitation aspect. Like there was a lack of role models, but I think with people like everyone on this call, there's obviously an urge and a sense in their mothers and parents and, you know, people in fat working in fashion who are saying, "Hey, hang on a sec. Like, look what you can do when you work with limitation, and look at the creativity that comes when you do work within limits."
Absolutely. I mean, without limits, it's very overwhelming. And the thing that I think also keeps us buying and keeps us, you know, looking out for that new is the overwhelm. It's like, it's overwhelming to look at our own wardrobes. It's overwhelming to look at how many clothes and garments we actually own. So what do I do instead? I'll just go out and buy that one top or that one thing, and that's going to be the thing I'm going to wear. That's going to be it. Like, that's the thing. But it's like, actually, with limitations, we can breed our creativity and we can coax it out of its hiding. We can coax those rainbow leggings and the rainbow dress and the rainbow skirt and everything. We can find what it means to dress authentically for ourselves without the overwhelm by putting constraints on it. Like, and I know, Viv, you were doing, what's it called? The PPP?
Project 333. And it's really bad. I should have pulled the book out and found the author. Oh, here, I've got it. Courtney Carter wrote a book called Project 333, I think. And she also wrote another one called Soulful Simplicity. And it was about cutting your wardrobe down to 33 items.
I'm about that. Next year, that's my new challenge, baby.
Hazel. Oh my gosh.
It's amazing. I'm not kidding. I said to Hazel when we were working together, I was like, I feel so like relaxed.
Yes.
Because decision making is a thing. Like, I have to reduce the barriers of decision making. So having just this limited, it just felt, every day felt really easy.
I love that.
And that, yeah, it's really amazing.
So I have been doing my wardrobe freeze, right, for 250 days almost. And I need to say that in that time, I've had zero body issues. Like, I've been so happy with my body, and my body has fluctuated. Like, I've lost weight, I've put on weight, but I haven't noticed because I'm so content with the clothing that I have. And then on Friday, So I've been working with this amazing woman. She was actually interviewed by Chrissy. I think she was like the second episode of Reloved Radio, Bethany Alice. And she does this. She does like creations, not alterations. And so I sent her five of my pieces to be altered in and like made into these new things. And they came back and I was so excited. And honestly, the work is incredible. Like the stuff she's made is awesome. But two of the things didn't fit. And I was like, huh? Like what? Excuse me? And like, it was the first time I've had that feeling of like body unworthiness in 250 days because, you know, normally you're going to the op shop, you're going to the vintage, you're going to consignment, you're going to the retail shops, you're trying stuff on, you know, every other weekend, however often it is. And without doing that, I've just been wearing clothes that fit for almost a year. And it's been such an incredible experience. And because this beautiful denim skirt just needs a little bit more alteration, a little bit like more give in the waist, I was put in a tailspin. And I was like, oh my God, like I hate my body. You know, all of those old stories that we tell ourselves about our body came back to me. And I was like, this is the power of not buying stuff, like just having a bit of a wardrobe freeze wherever that is, if it's like 7 days, if it's 2 months, however long, is that just wearing clothes that fit you make you forget that there's all of that stuff from the fashion industry being like, you got to wear this, like, no, it doesn't look good on my body, you got to wear that, doesn't actually fit me. And it was just, yeah, really interesting to see where my mind went as soon as something didn't fit me.
That is so powerful. Yes. So, so powerful.
Yeah, choosing clothes, choosing the clothes that make you feel like sensorily, that's what I've noticed is a really big thing for me. And I notice it also because it's been reflected to me with my kids. There are stuff that they just, materials.
Oh, my like, goodness. That.
Jeans.
Oh, my goodness.
My kids wouldn't wear jeans for so long just because denim did not feel nice
yes,
for them.
Yep.
I never yep. wore thongs as a child because I didn't like the feeling of my toes being spread. Oh my gosh, I'm talking about my toes. Oh my God. Okay, I need to stop. Put me in the bin. I will escort myself back. It's a safe place. I never wore thongs as a child because I didn't like the feeling of the bit that goes between your toes. I was like, oh. And it's funny, now I actually don't own any thongs and even my heels that are like strappy. No, there's nothing there. And it's so interesting you said the sensory part because that sensory feeling, no, can't do it. I don't think I'll, yeah, it's a sensory no to me. If it's a sensory no, it's a no-go.
Honestly, there's a big thing in a particular philosophy called aware parenting. And it's a woman who, she also has her own kind of thing, the Marian method, but she talks a lot about willingness and the will. And when kids are forced to do things against their will, where there's a sense of coercion, which let's face it, like we live systemically in a culture that is a lot about coercion, a lot about pushing and striving. And when kids and people are forced to do things where they're not willing, then suddenly and slowly the will gets pushed down and pushed down. So we're more likely to do things that we're not willing to do because we're not connected to that innate body wisdom.
Absolutely.
And so then it's no wonder we start kind of like, we reach midlife, I'm 43, we reach midlife and we're like, I've only got to wear tracksuit pants because, you know, it's this sort of sense of suddenly I'm just like, I am only wearing shit that feels really good. And like you said, Hazel, when I'm wearing stuff that feels really good, it has something and an impact on the life force and the energy of how I am in the world and how I relate with the world.
Absolutely. I was just a week and a bit ago, I was just on a retreat with 8 women and we were doing some energy work and things. And we were doing shadow workshops, which if you have any background in like energy work and things, is the really gritty, not like dark stuff pretty much in the short form, the dark stuff. And when you go to that place and every day, everyone would just dress themselves. And it was so interesting to see the difference between the clothes that people wore to arrive, what they wore during the shadow workshops, what they wore when we just had dinner and after we did all that, and the difference in the fabrics, the difference in the colors, the difference in what was important. And there were certain days, I remember where one day I woke up and I went, I just need to wear trackies and a long sleeve shirt. And I think I actually am wearing the same top right now. And it's like so comfortable. And that sensory experience of just being really comfortable with myself to then be able to be vulnerable and show up as myself was so ultimately important in that moment.
And imagine if everyone had this sense of awareness. And I think someone said the ritual or the there was another ceremony word that came up. But ceremony, if there was a, and it didn't have to be a big ding dang dong of a thing, but if there was a sense of awareness and ceremony when we were getting dressed for the day around how we were feeling, kind of a check-in, what am I needing? Am I needing to feel kind of gentle? Am I needing to feel really bold and expressed today? And there was that level of awareness and intention that went into how we were dressing ourselves, how we might feel as we moved around that day as
absolutely
a consequence of that.
I can't meditate. I have a very rough time sitting and meditating. I don't know about you guys, if you have the same or you have the capability with children maybe to be able to do that. Same as someone with no children.
That's the ignore the children. Go inside.
I'm on my soapbox of not having children or not having that responsibility yet. And I used to joke that my ceremony of the day was, or my ritual was, sitting down and having a cup of coffee. And for that time, my phone's not involved. There's nothing. I'm just really enjoying this cup of coffee. And now what I do is when I get dressed in the morning, I pick out like two options, maybe three if I'm feeling a little bit more adventurous. And I pick out the earrings that I'm going to put with it and the shoes. And I don't leave that space of my wardrobe or the house until I'm content with how I am. And my biggest belief is that the way that we dress ourselves is actually a big form of self-care, and that way that we treat ourselves and giving, I know it's not as accessible to everyone to have that space. You know, I'm saying this as someone who can walk into my wardrobe for half an hour if I do choose without having to worry about other humans or any, you know, crazy huge responsibilities like that. But having that time that I set aside every single day just for me, no one else, like it's purely for me with the intention and the motivation that I just need this for me. That is my form of meditation or yoga. That's what that is for me. And I feel like when people can pull that for themselves, even if it's 5 minutes.
Yeah, the intentionality.
It's something that it's purposeful. It's, you enjoy it. You look forward to it. I sometimes go to bed and I've already got the clothes I'm going to wear the next day hung up and I'm excited after I've had a shower and going, oh, what earrings am I going to put on with this? Or am I going to do my hair up or down? Am I feeling more bold today? Or do I just want to be comfortable? Where does that come from? And where am I going to get it from? Like, how am I giving that to myself? And I try to be uninterrupted during that time. But yeah, the intentionality of it, when you give that to yourself, I find when I'm doing that, I either find more things in my wardrobe or as I'm putting on a top, I'll go, oh, the next time I wear this, I'm going to wear it with this skirt because I like this for the purpose of today because I need pants on. I need pants to do my things. But next time when I don't need to do the things, I'm going to wear a really big flowy skirt that I've got hanging up because as I'm holding this top to it, I'm seeing how the color theory is matching it.
Me excited.
Going, oh my gosh, I can't wait to wear this again. Like, how much fun is that?
Yeah.
Going like, oh, the next time I wear it, or I don't know if any of you have that, but when you wear something in summer and then you realize, oh, if I put a long sleeve under it, it's winter now. I can winter this.
I can winter it.
The summer dress.
Yeah.
I can winter this. Like it's, and I get so excited when I can start wintering summer dresses because I'm a dress girl through and through. And I love when I can put my long sleeve top on underneath my like bright green little summer dress. I go, yes, this is wicked. I have the summer energy in winter and it's great. And I find that when I'm doing that ceremonial practice getting dressed.
Yeah. And I think that what I hear from both you and Hazel is, you know, there's this, and I discovered it kind of actually through art and through drawing, but whenever anyone is being creative, it's understanding that creative energy is regenerative. It's sort of like it's a way that you can shift your own energy through the creativity and through the creative process. So there's such empowerment, and I don't tend to use that word because it, you know,
feels like a dirty word.
But there's a lot of power and life force and energy that is created through creating and through being creative, that we outsource kind of getting energy from other places, but actually that is how you are generating your own energy.
Absolutely. And it's like, you can do that, Charlie, because, you know, you can do that. I can do that. Leave can do that. I'm sure Jacinta can do that too. It's like, we can do that because we've spent the time finding the pieces and the things that we love, and we have a relationship with those clothes. Because I feel exactly the same as you. I get so excited about wearing things, but it's because I have an ongoing relationship that gets deeper and deeper with the items in my wardrobe. Every time I wear them, it's like they hold the memories of the things that we've done in them. Like, I've got this skirt that I wore during both my pregnancies with both kids, like, you know, things that you imbue these individual and kind of like heart meaning into the items in your wardrobe. And then you can love them more, you can wear them more, you can keep them for longer, and they really mean something to you. They have an imbued meaning, which I think is like the number one thing that we need to think about when we're trying to potentially curb our consumerism, is like having ownership, having love for the things in our wardrobe.
So Viv and Hazel, other than my little saying I've just come up with the last 10 seconds, we need to start dating our wardrobe.
Yes.
How we, like, honestly, yeah. I think we need to treat our wardrobe like we're going on a date with it. Like, yeah, that's, in my opinion, it's start like date it.
I don't know if you guys, anyone has read Big Magic, but Elizabeth Gilbert in that book, which is all about creativity and a creative practice, and she's a writer, she talks about dressing up to like she's going on a date or have a wild love affair with the piece writing. And it, yeah, the image of it, it really obviously stuck in my brain. But I love that. I love the playfulness that comes in. And I think that's another important aspect of this whole picture, which is we forget to play as we become adults.
And we don't give ourselves the time to, because in case we get it wrong, it's like time is so important. If we get it wrong, then we've wasted the time, but it's never a waste. It's always going to be important and, you know, energizing. Like you said, it's such a huge energetic piece for me, and I'm sure everyone else.
And making it safe to experiment, because I think what can happen is, and particularly when you become a mum, a bit like you were saying, Hazel, is you feel that you fall into this new persona. In any stage of life, you might decide, oh, this is my new persona, that kind of closes it puts the blinkers on to what's possible as soon as you are one or a particular type of person. And you really need it's about kind of making it safe to giving yourself permission to experiment.
Oh, that one's good.
So Jacinta, from a financial perspective, how do you think that the prevalence of fast fashion is contributing to, first of all, financial strain, but second of all, debt amongst consumers, particularly women?
So it's quite layered, and I don't want to shame anyone, because obviously fast fashion for some is an accessibility, you know, for providing for yourself or your family. So I think I like to go to the structures that we all have to exist under, which is all relevant to what we've all been talking about, but we live under like a patriarchal society, and capitalism is fueled by that. So the reason women, or a large part of how women are conditioned, is to hate ourselves. And if you buy things, you'll feel better. And that the system is designed that you use your disposable income to like burn through. And I have a theory, I just call it the princess theory. Like, I think we're conditioned from very young. Obviously, it's a heteronormative thing, but we'll meet someone and he'll look after us and he'll have the money, and like our money's designed for fun. Like, there was obviously a point when our rights were fought for to be able to have like our name on credit cards and on houses, but I don't think it was finished in terms of the mentality of like, how are you going to look after yourself as an individual? It was always tethered to your relationship with a man. And I think that's just a huge part to think about. So in terms of fast fashion, I think it just feeds the beast and it's multiplied because it's a way to make money. That's the system we live under. And the easiest way is, like, I know a lot of women talking about this, but yeah, no one's talking about men shopping. Like, there's a reason it was designed for us to spend and just constantly seek feeling better, because that's the conditioning of capitalism. Like, if you buy this, you're going to feel better. Like, everything you've spoken about, I know that cookie top you're talking about, there were a different group of girls that wore it, but that I know it. Like, we've all had like a similar experience coming up. I think about the times when there were like knockoff brands, and it was like a lot more embarrassing to have those. Like, Adidas was what, 3 stripes, and then like a knockoff brand was 2 stripes. Maybe you could get a big W or something. And you were like mortified as a kid wearing that. And I'm one of 4. So like, my parents went out buying like brand name clothing for us. But like, I knew when my friends had a Billabong skirt or a Rusty skirt, like, you're sort of divided in status of like how much money you have. Absolutely. And like, I've worked from a very young age. Like, I was 13 and 9 months, and my dad's like, get a job. You still have to do your chores, but you're not getting pocket money. So I've paid for my own stuff. I paid for my own phone since I was 14. Like, I've been provided like food, shelter and stuff, but I've been very self-sufficient for a long time. So I just look around and see, yeah, the conditioning, and yeah, it's to seek like what you're going to get from it, like the dopamine. And things that are like really terrifying now is like buy now, pay later.
Yes. Oh my God. And,
oh, like, I'm scared of afterpay.
Credit card. Yeah. And that's like I think that's one of the largest debts we have in Australia now. And it's because we're not taught, all of us, regardless of gender, we're not taught like about money and like how to use it. And like, passing down that information is wealth in itself. Like, if you've come up in a family that talks to you about investing and what your super does and how to have an emergency fund and splitting up your paycheck, like, that is valuable information. And like, we're not taught that. And then you just sink further into, it's always like how other people think, like, who was it for? Like, I found myself doing this yesterday. I was going to a first birthday and I was like, I have nothing to wear. And so I was like looking up stuff the night before. And I was like, just looking, I knew what was going to happen. I'll look. And then I could go get that. And then I was like, oh, go to your wardrobe. And my stress is like finding shoes, because I don't, personally, like, I'm not a big shopper. I don't really, clothes aren't my thing, but I understand expressing yourself. But I found it more frustrating in the past few years, like being 35. I just felt there's no clothes for my age group from like 30 to 50. I just feel like they're really sort of left out. And yeah, I went and tried to get my dopamine fix, and then I was like, oh, I'll just wear something I have. And I found something and I put it with some shoes, and I was like, oh, it doesn't look as bad as I thought. But I really try like a minimalist approach. Like, I have one pair of heels, one pair of sneakers, one pair of flats, and then yeah, I don't have a lot to play with because it's like not a priority. But that's from a financial perspective. It's like, what are my values? My value is time. So I don't, that's not where I play. I go like for experiences. And I actually was thinking about this the other day, like in travel, I gave a lot of my stuff away because I took like one suitcase to the US when I moved there in 2018. I gave away everything I had, cookbooks, clothes, my favorite cowboy boots that I wore with everything. Like, I gave everything away because it's like, yeah, I have nostalgia for stuff and they were like cool things I owned, but I don't know, it's cyclical to me. I was like, it was for a time and then like that's my journey with it and it's over. But yeah, fast fashion is a hard thing to navigate because I think about people who need the access to it. And now it's like not as embarrassing to buy stuff at Kmart. It's like where everyone goes. Like, it's a total shift to when I was younger. But I think about people who need access to things that are cheaper. But yeah, it's a vicious cycle. And I think people need to remember, like, I don't want anyone to feel bad because, like, we're under a system.
Yes.
And it's working perfectly.
Yes.
Like, we are the pawns.
Yeah.
So,
and sadly, we're the product now. Like, we have become the product. They're mining, you know, everything that we do online in order to advertise more effectively to us, and what's sold is our data so that people can aim things specifically at us by this now. Like, it's just,
yeah. I saw a post today. I didn't get to read the article, but I went to read like the blurb in the comments. But a woman was pregnant and she said, I was trying to have my pregnancy silent, so that she wanted to see if the algorithm, like if you didn't talk about being pregnant or having a baby, like could the algorithm pick up you're going to be a new parent, because that in itself is you lay out a lot of money for all the supplies that you need to have your first kid.
That you never then use.
And I thought that was haunting. It's like, I was like, yeah, it's haunting. Like they're not even here yet and you've got the markers on them of that baby. Like they could follow that kid forever. Like they know that you're the parent. They have your dad. Like if we all knew how much the tabs that they kept on us, it would be haunting. I remember someone telling me that 7 years ago.
And Jacinta, that's a good point that you make about just, I was thinking back to when I had my first baby and the amount of stuff that we bought and the amount of stuff that we didn't use. But how the thing behind all of that, especially as a new parent, and I know it's not fashion, but just generally consuming and buying stuff in general, it's this fear of like not knowing what you're doing with the parenting thing, where you feel like you have it all to support you. So there's it, like you said, like going way back, I think you said something about the a fairy tale.
Oh yeah, like yeah.
And
yeah.
Princess. Like a Disney princess, yeah. The Disney princess thing of like you're the prize to be won at the end of it. Not actually, it's the story is not about you. It's about the hero, and you're just the prize that they win at the end and the happily ever after. Like whether we like it or not. And hopefully less so with the Disney movies that are being produced nowadays. But certainly for my era, it was all about being saved by the man and the man providing. Even though feminism was around, it's like how ingrained that gets in the mind of a 4 or 5 year old about, you know, your financial sovereignty or agency. It takes a long time to come back round to being like, oh, no, I actually can figure this out and be the heroine of my own story.
Isn't it marketing 101 to sell people that they have a problem and that you have the solution?
Yeah. Like this will make you feel.
It's the worst piece.
It's selling you an idea.
You need this rocker for your baby because it will do this, because otherwise this will happen. And it's like, wait, what?
It's trading in people's fear. And that's the kind of.
But that's exactly what the fashion industry does as well. It trades in people's fear. You are not worthy. You are not good enough. How can you be good enough by this? That's, you know, that is fashion marketing 101.
Oh, yeah. Even, gosh, the amount of times I see things that are like, this top will make your boobs look bigger. Like, what's wrong with my boobs? Like, it you know, it does it with our body especially, or this will snatch your waist. And it's like, why do I need to be snatched? Why do I need to be uncomfortable?
Do you know, the ultimate one is you're worth it. Ooh. I feel like that catchphrase in marketing, I'm like, wow, do I need someone outside me to tell me that I'm worth it? Fuck.
Yeah, like treat yourself.
Yeah. That's the ultimate one financially of like, you're worth it. You deserve this.
Deserve what? Another thing.
It's a reward. It's all reward system. Yeah.
So just on that topic, I wanted to ask what some of the practical steps might be that we can take if we wanted to pause and reflect on our consumption habits, especially around fast fashion.
So the one that I do, so I don't online shop. So I have an issue with online shopping. I prefer to go and get something and feel it in my hand. Maybe it's just the sensory experience. I'm sure Vive or Jacinta, you could probably put that something else, but that's not for this podcast. That's not for this podcast. That's for a clinical room. But one thing that I do is I love Pinterest. I really do love social media. I know there's dark sides to it, but I do think there's some really great creative aspects of it. And I actually have a Pinterest page. I make a new one every few months. And I go through my wardrobe and I look at I try and memorize as much as I can. And I make a Pinterest board of basically like clothes that are already in my wardrobe, if that makes sense, or colors or styles. I go to it. Because sometimes like, look, I'm a very creative person, but sometimes like I will go to that little Pinterest page and there's like a dress with big puffy shoulders. And I might have 7 different looks saved of dresses with big puffy shoulders. And I look, okay, what kind of scene is that in? It almost gives you like, it's like a guideline that I've made for myself of my own wardrobe, just redone in creative ways. And because there's an algorithm on Pinterest, when you search one thing, you know, more things like that come up. if I give myself maybe a little bit of time, maybe each few months to really look at that, I get all these ideas that aren't of things that I want to get. It's things I already have. I do have a little small Pinterest board of the dream items I'd love to find in an op shop that I love the way that they're made or the things on them that I'm like, yes, this is so cool. I'm obsessed. This is creatively amazing. But having that little page of already curated outfits, I mean, basically like a lookbook, but it's just not me in the photos, I can already really, like when I, you know, think, oh, I've got an event, I want to change up a look, I've already got that as a guideline for myself. And it's already made of things that are already in my wardrobe. So the creative aspect, that burden is taken off my shoulders. I'm not bothered by it. And then like, it's already one step into the space of trying and being creative and having a bit of fun. It's already one step in that direction because 9 out of 10 times, I don't end up going with the same look that I found on Pinterest. I end up with a mismatch of something else because it was that little push to go get in there and try some stuff on. Just give it a go.
Yeah. It's like having a menu. It's like the body loves some kind of a roadmap. There's something really reassuring about it. So to have the a la carte menu there with already prompting the ideas, it's like, oh, that's just way easier.
And it's such a good way of shopping your wardrobe.
It definitely is.
Like, because people don't know how necessarily to go about that from a practical standpoint. But like you said, just having that inspiration, and even if it's just a point to jump off of, it's still an ability to visually see how you can use what you already have in a new way, in a way that you've not done before, which kind of like feeds into to feed that like pursuit for the new that we constantly have. And that is kind of like, you know, that's why we go to buyers, because we're looking for new, new, new. But those new outfit combinations through the inspiration that you've gathered is such a great way of doing it.
It's like having a fashion magazine where you're looking at all these different options and you're getting really inspired. But the catch is, it's not inspiring you to then go out and buy something new. It's inspiring you to go to your wardrobe and pick out that thing that you already have and wear it either a different way or wear it again.
That's my practical tip of, if you want to start somewhere where it feels like it's already done a little bit for you, just start there.
Mine's super, super simple, and it's based on a practice, and you could use this for anything really, but I think it's a great one to use whenever you have that kind of impulse to, I think Jacinta was talking about reaching for the dopamine hit, which is, it's from the Center of Nonviolent Communication, and it's about, what's the feeling? What am I needing? And what are the other strategies to get that feeling, get that need met? So often it's just identifying, like, what am I feeling around needing something new? So it's noticing and pausing, asking yourself those questions. What are my feelings? What am I needing? And there's a beautiful worksheet actually on their website where it lists like universal needs. And it gives a real nuanced approach to starting to get in touch with what it is that you need. And then, you know, what are the other strategies that I could get this need met to feel excited, to feel beautiful or sexy or whatever it is that we're longing to feel, or we're needing to, you know, feel in our bodies. What are the other strategies that I could do to feel that way?
And I think that kind of feeds into, you know, the way consumerism has basically been sold to us to fill in the place of all of those things. And it's like, what are the real things that we care about? Is it spending time with your friends? Is it spending time with your loved ones? For me, it's my business. Like, the thing that's really allowed me to not consume this year and to really actually stick to my wardrobe freeze is because I love what I do in my business. And it's so important to me to get the message out to women that you can wear what you love, wear what you already have. And those two things are not different, and they can be synonymous, and to start to decouple our sense of personal style with consumerism is like, I've put all of my energy that I would have probably put into op shopping, say a year ago, into really refining that message and helping people to do the same. It's like, for me, that fills that part for me. It fills what op shopping was giving me. And for me, I guess it's really just leaning into what I really want to wear. And I know that we've talked about that before, but it's like you said, just into what I really want to wear is not what's in the shops necessarily. I want to wear something that makes me feel authentic, makes me feel like I'm being presented in the world in a way that I feel inside. And that comes from, you know, maybe upcycling my clothes, like I've done lots of dyeing of them and changing them. And that is another way, like research shows that in fashion psychology, if we have ownership of our clothes in that way of upcycling or mending them, you know, that the visible mending trend is huge at the moment, we actually engage with them on a deeper level. We have more of a long-lasting and loving relationship with our clothes because we have that small part of ownership over them.
And once again, Hazel, like emphasizing the agency in creativity that generates the you, because what we're taught is that we're disempowered and we can't fix things or change things or create new things because we need to go out and buy the new thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
As opposed to we actually can grow the skills to dye our clothes, to fix our, you know, like you did with your birthings, to totally change the color of your Birkenstocks.
And I have a friend who sews because I have not taken up that hobby, but I've had things fixed. But also I was going to say we're conditioned to think we can buy the feeling. And like, you can't buy the feeling. The skill is to sit with what's missing, what's the void I'm trying to fill, like sitting and observing yourself, which I know Viva's spoken about. But yeah, that's the skill rather than thinking I can buy this, not ultimately feel happier, sexier, whatever. And then it's like, or sitting with like, I'm buying, but I just think I could buy the feeling, but that's not possible. So
it's temporary.
Yes, you're temporary high. Yeah.
And just also that point of like being really mindful about that, but and not feeling guilty about it. It's like, again, research will show that if we feel guilty about something like overconsumption, it's more likely to actually lead to doing those actions again. And we, you know, the guilt is kind of what keeps us trapped or keeps us stagnant in our consumption.
And you talked about this, Chrissy and Hazel were talking about the overwhelm of saving the world from fast fashion. And it made me immediately think, you know, when we're overwhelmed, we very quickly go to hopelessness. Like, well, what's the point? I may as well just buy it because I'm never going to fix the world's problems with fast fashion and the amount of fabric that's getting thrown into the ocean or wherever it is going. But it's always bringing it back to, and I know this in more of a tending my own garden, which
so euphemism
could be a metaphor for many things. But, you know,
we've had a lot of those kind of moments where we've gone, is that for the podcast or is that for a therapist? Not sure.
But, you know, coming back to tending just your small part of life and what's within your sphere of control, like always being able to come back and being like, well, what's within my sphere of control is I could think about what I'm trying to feel by purchasing this as the absolute first piece and with absolute compassion. Because like you were saying, Hazel, if there's no compassion, if it's suppressing the urge to purchase, that suppression is going to come back and bite you. Like suppression and pushing away, inevitably the pressure is just there. It's just being held at bay for a time. And then when you say, Hazel, that people tend to just purchase anyway, it's because whatever we suppress kind of comes back up at us.
Thank you so much, Viv, Jacinta, Charlie and Hazel for sharing your expertise. I'm absolutely loving how you're inspiring us all to rethink our habits and our choices, particularly around fashion consumption. For our listeners, be sure to join us for the next two episodes in this series, because we're going to continue to explore mindful fashion consumption, ethical shopping practices, and the power of conscious consumerism. Thanks for listening. We'll see you then. Thanks for listening to ReLoved Radio. You can find the show notes from today's episode on the website www.relovedradio.com.au. And that's also where you can download my handpicked list of places to shop secondhand online in Australia. It features over 85 of the best online op shops, charity stores, vintage specialists, secondhand retailers, pre-loved luxury and designer fashion, ex-rental sales, and more. And it's free to download.